This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Last year, the COVID-19 pandemic had hydroxychloroquine, which has since been debunked as being effective in preventing and treating COVID-19. This year, we have ivermectin. Now, is ivermectin, which is a veterinary anti-parasite medication, the miracle drug it's touted to be, or should it be approached with extreme caution? Today, I'm checking in with Dr. Christopher Lee, infectious disease physician, on this very question. Now, I want to start our show today by appealing to all of you pet owners out there, especially if you have a dog, because you'll be familiar with HeartGuard, and that's a heartworm medication to prevent intestinal worms in dogs. And when you look at the package, it says ivermectin. Now, how did ivermectin, which is used for animals, come into the spotlight for COVID-19?
Well, ivermectin, some researchers found that ivermectin seems to be able to suppress the replication of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID. Now, this is something they found in the laboratory. And of course, until today, we don't have very strong antivirals against COVID. So everybody gets excited, understandably so. And this, we talked about repurposing this old drug, which we are familiar with for parasitic infections, to be used in humans for COVID. Now, of course, ivermectin can be used for human beings or for parasitic diseases like river blinders, trondylomonas. You know, these are parasitic diseases. But the dosage, of course, is meant for those parasites, right? But number one, we have to prove it in the clinical setting to make sure it really works. Number two, what is the right way of using it? What dose are we talking about, all right? There is the dose. If you use ivermectin for river blindness, the dose is different. Or if you use the drug for, let's say, strongyloitis, the dosage is different, all right? So what is the right dose, if at all, for COVID-19? The only way we can know for sure is actually doing a proper clinical study, you know? Even if the drug works, but using it at the wrong dose is not going to help anyone, might even do more harm, might cause side effects and things like that. So at the end of the day, that was how it first started, mainly because there was very poor antivirals found suitable or effective against COVID-19. So when people are desperate, you know, people do this. I think COVID-19 has given us a lot of false dawns, isn't it, about treatments, isn't it? Everybody remember hydroxychloroquine, lopinavir, the HIV drug, but at the end of the day, all of them were not found to be effective.
When it has been proven to be able to suppress the virus in the lab, why wouldn't it work the same way in humans?
Well, that's what we call in vitro and in vivo studies. Like, you know, it's what happens in the test tube may not always reflect what happens in the body. In the body, there are a lot of other moving parts. Pun intended, a lot of moving parts in the human body, whereas in the test tube, okay, there's only so much happens in the test tube, all right? And of course, there are also the other thing. The ivermectin probably won't hurt the test tube very much, but it can hurt you and I a lot more, you know? And again, the dosages, because we have clearance, what you put in the test tube doesn't go away, but what you put in our body goes away, whether it's metabolized by the liver or by the kidney and things like that. So there are many, many moving parts. So at the end of the day, a lot of research starts in the lab, no question, all right? Often with animals first and then move on. Here, there was a bit of shortcut because this is a drug that we are familiar with already for different diseases. And therefore, it felt safer. We're more comfortable using it now for human beings. But the thing is, it's for a different purpose completely. And so people, you know, understandably get excited.
And can you help us to understand that difference in dosage? If I'm not mistaken, if you were taking it for treatment of parasitic infections, we're talking maybe once-off dose or once every few months. Am I right?
Correct. And it's normally one dose, one-off thing. And the dosage is a bit different depending on which parasite you want to target for. All right. But for in the COVID, we are it's like Star Trek, you know, in going to place where nobody has gone before, that kind of thing. So we have to experiment. And the only way we know for sure is actually doing robust clinical trials, you know, where you have one arm that is matched with the other arm, that equally matched the two arms. One gets the study drug, the other one gets either a placebo or a treatment that we are very familiar with so that we can compare. and it must be matched. It must be randomized. So I cannot say, okay, those who like to take ivermectin go to the ivermectin group. Those who don't want to take ivermectin go to the non-ivermectin group. It cannot. It must be randomized. In fact, ideally, it should be blinded so that even if you, your husband come in for the trial, you wouldn't know what you're getting and your husband wouldn't know what she's getting, all right, until at the end of the trial. We do that to make sure there's no issue of chance or selective bias, isn't it, right? Here, there are many reasons for selective bias. For example, in COVID, we know if you're a 20-year-old chap and you catch COVID versus an 80-year-old chap who catches COVID, we know who is more likely to do poorly. We know that. All right. Now it's changed a little bit because of the Delta variant. But still, for a 20-year-old, the chances of being very ill or dying is still fairly low. 80-year-old man is a lot higher. So you cannot compare the treatment here. If a group has a lot of 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, and the other group has a lot of 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds, so it has to be matched in that sense. So when people don't have this randomized controlled trials, so they just say, oh, I treated 100 people. It depends which 100 people you treated. If you treated 100 people who are all in their 20s, healthy, no diabetes, no this, no that, the chances of them doing well is probably very good now, right? Because you cannot compare. So even if you don't give any medicine, if you have a control group without any medication, both groups may actually look very good. In fact, better not give anything because they do just as well, you know? So I think that's why it has to be in that well-structured, randomized control studies.
So does that mean there are currently no such studies on ivermectin? A lot of people say, there are studies that show this and that. A lot of people talk about this major study that came out of Egypt. But apparently that has since been discredited. So, you know, give us a picture of exactly what is the landscape of ivermectin being studied right now.
Well, a lot of people look at the meta-analysis. Meta-analysis means they take a lot of trials, they try to combine them together and give an overview. So that is always tricky for meta-analysis because it depends on what you put in the basket, isn't it? So number one, meta-analysis has to be done carefully by right people, with the right motivation, with no bias. And you set up the boundaries. For example, I will only include studies, let's say, that have been followed the research principles, no randomized controlled trials, you know, the same outcome you're focusing and things like that. Because some people might say, okay, I see if ivermectin to see how many people die. Okay, that's the primary endpoint. Another group will say, okay, I give ivermectin to see how many people have their fever shortened. No, so that is a different finishing line. So even that will impact on your studies, on your data. So it has to be orange for orange whenever possible. So meta-analysis, when you pull together, sometimes if it's not done properly, it can give you a mixed bag of results. Now, this study in Egypt, the one you mentioned, it's never published by a paper. It came out as a preprint. Preprint means because of this rush for new information, that they have this thing called preprints that you can send it out. It's written down there, preprint, warning the reader to say, this is not validated or read by experts yet. They have not teased out the data, argued or questioned the author yet, and things like that. So at face value, all right? But when people are so desperate, you know, it's like, wow. And it was there for a while until someone did the review of that, looked at the details, looked at the raw data, and found, hey, a lot of issues there, you know, like a lot of some plagiarism. Some patient, you know, was recruited before the trial actually started, because you must say, okay, the trial started here, ended here, so you cannot recruit patients who come before that date. So things like that, which are very schoolboy stuff that we all researchers know. So because of that, this was highlighted, and the company that sets up this site called Research Square decided, no, this is not good. They pull it up. That's why now it's off that site, because it's not validated. There have been good studies published in JAMA, the American Journal of Medicine, also in the British journals, and they found that when we use for two groups, mildly ill patients, admitted but mild, they didn't seem to show impact. There was also a study looking at prevention and didn't seem to have effect. But these studies were not huge. There are a few hundred patients, not super big studies. But the exciting one is the one by the Oxford group called the Principal Study, which is started about a month and a half ago with a lot of patients hoped for, and is meant for prophylaxis, giving to people who have a risk of getting COVID and giving ivermectin before they catch it. Prophylaxis, which I think we all know is happening here in the community as well. People are getting hands on ivermectin and taking it. Yeah. So that study will take some time to collect. The Ministry of Health, because of this, still we also hope for some success. So the Ministry of Health in 12 centers have started this ivermectin use, but the target is patients who are ill. This is looking at patients who come in category 3 and 4 who are sick and giving it versus a group that doesn't get it and then compare. If the last time I spoke to the principal investigator, we are now just past the halfway mark in terms of recruitment. Right? I think recruitment should be very fast because so many patients are.
We'll go for a quick break, and when we come back, are any other countries using ivermectin? And should our government override the authority of the National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Agency, or NPRA, as suggested by some politicians recently? We'll find out. I'm speaking to Dato Dr. Christopher Lee, infectious disease physician, about whether to believe the hype about ivermectin for COVID-19. We'll be right back, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. My guest, Dato Dr. Christopher Lee, infectious disease physician. We're discussing whether ivermectin should be used for preventing or treating COVID-19. So right now, what I'm hearing from Dr. Chris is the jury is still out because there is no proper evidence from good randomized controlled trials to back up the use of ivermectin. And without this kind of evidence, it could be unsafe for us to use it. But there are a lot of people who will cite, you know, there's X country using it. India is very often cited, you know, even though they're not actually using it. So, Dr. Chris, where is this coming from? Are any countries actually using ivermectin?
Well, I hope people don't say, oh, Malaysia is also using it. Because I think as KKM mentioned, I think DG mentioned himself, they approve special permission, isn't it? What we call it KPK approval. Like that means you write in for a drug that is not registered or not indicated for certain things. We ask permission for DG to allow us to do that. And the pharmacy division look at it, give you all the boundaries and say, okay, at the end, it's your responsibility. You know, we allow it for use for that purpose only, but your responsibility is yours. It's not yet registered in the country. Other people cannot buy it. Now, it doesn't mean Ministry of Health approved it. Ministry of Health allow you to use it for compassionate grounds or sometimes for studies, right? I have done many studies involving drugs that are not yet in the country, wrote in and DG gave the approval. We imported the drugs just to do the study. But unfortunately, I'm sure you read in the newspaper, somebody said, wow, in the WhatsApp messages, KKM has approved usage, all right? It's not, it's different. It's for that purpose only. That happens in cancer therapy and things like that. So that is not approval. So when people say India approved it or Philippines, I think we have to be careful what it means.
All right. You know, I want to just very quickly, since you brought up how the pharmacy division will have to approve and give a certain boundaries, right? And so that's the role of the NPRA. Now, when Parliament sat, and there were MPs who brought up ivermectin. And, you know, because they have a role in influencing public opinion, so I want to just address some of the points that they raised. So some of them brought up the government should overrule the NPRA on this and approve ivermectin. Now, what are your concerns with these kinds of calls?
I think it's a very dangerous step forward. Yes, all of us, and I think many people in government, we have heard this during this pandemic, oh, NPRA is dragging their feet, NPRA is slow. I mean, we can argue what is slow and what is timely. We can argue that people are desperate, everything seems slow. But there must be due process. The reason NPRA is there to ensure the drugs that come into the country is safe, it's meant for that indication, minimize the misuse, and the quality of the drug is assured before it gets registered in the country. That's their job. It's like all the other drug authorities in other parts of the world, like the FDA in America. So to do this effectively, there is some time needed. There's no question about it. Like, you know, I think in good faith, we hope the people in NPRA are trying to do the best they can to be as accurate and proper as possible so that their decisions is made on good evidence. But if we start asking the government of the day who are not technical people in this area, I think it's a dangerous step forward. I mean, I've been an ID physician all my life. I remember in the bad old days, some politician contacted me and asked me to use ozone therapy.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And we said, we had to politely say no. But we said, if you want to do it at a proper study. You know, you have to start from the very beginning, show safety data and all that, and register it as a study, you know, rather than just go and use it. If Malaysia moves forward as a developed country, that is the way we have to go. We must ensure it's safe. I mean, imagine hydroxychloroquine. You can argue, were we pressured? Many countries were pressured. America was pressured. And then WHO started these trials. Malaysia was part of that trial, solidarity trial. And we found hydroxychloroquine wasn't working at all. We found Caltrate, which is an HIV drug, a drug I'm very familiar with. And we used it as well in Malaysia. It didn't work. So we stopped using it now completely. All right. So the same thing for ivermectin. And as well as recommended by FDA and the WHO, if you want to use it in the clinical trial setting so that you draw the boundaries, you use it for this purpose, the goalposts are all drawn. And after the study, at least you have a data, all right? So if it works, you have data, it works. If it doesn't work, you have data, it doesn't work. But we have data. The good thing is after the end of the study, we have data. And then if the data works, hopefully it works, then the whole country will get access. And the technocrats and the politicians will know they are giving something good with minimal harm to the public. We have to go through that due process. Otherwise, none of us are safe.
Something else the MPs brought up is allowing off-label use. Is that what you described when the NPRA can approve only for a certain kind of usage?
Yeah, there must be a clear indication. So even if, let's say, you get some antihypertensive drug, one that's registered in the country, the indication there is specified, oh, it's used to treat hypertension. Officially, you cannot take the antihypertension pill and give it to treat hemorrhoids. Let's say, there's no such drug. I'm just giving an example. Mm-hmm. You cannot use that. Officially, you're not supposed to use that. You have to put in a new indication. Oh, this drug can also be used for hemorrhoids. This is the data. This is the studies that show it can work. And then, of course, it can be reviewed. All right. That is the process. That's how we make sure that the drugs we get is safe. There must be some due process. There are ways we can shorten it, I'm sure. Some administrative stuff, we can shorten it. We can get more people to study the drug at the same time. They can shorten it. So there are ways of shortening it. But that process must still happen for any drug. But for drugs that are not registered, there is a pathway, there is a channel, and I mentioned that, KPK approval.
So the thing is, like you said, people are desperate. We're in a situation where we feel like we are not in control. And here's something that offers this promise. And a lot of the times, the argument is, what's the harm anyway? You say that it's not been proven to work, but why not, since there are no side effects, right? So what is the argument to that?
Right. Okay. I mean, two things here. Number one, I think I'm not saying you cannot give it. I say do it under a clinical trial so that you can collect data at the same time. Imagine we did not do the study with hydroxychloroquine. We just accepted whatever came up in the initial media, what Donald Trump said, you know, everybody used hydroxychloroquine. If not for that big solidarity trial that WHO sponsored, which Malaysia was part of, you might still be using hydroxychloroquine today. And does it cause harm? Yes, any drug can cause harm. Now, when I said ivermectin may not cause harm, it is based on the dosages we are familiar with for those parasitic conditions. The doses they are now put forward by various researchers and people are following, have they been thoroughly studied? The answer is no. And how do you know that's the right dose? That's the question I'm asking. How do you know? So are we treating people or are we still guessing? That's why a study helps us. Do a study, a randomized controlled study. And for those people who are really passionate about the drug, I say, I can assure you, if you are treating 1,000 people in this group, 500 people will get the drug. And I hope it works. I hope it works. But after that peer study, then we can prove it. Then you say, oh, but the other 500 is not getting it. I said, yeah, but now before we start the study, nobody's getting it. But what we get at the end of the study is data. We know for sure. Now we don't know. We know until today, hydroxychloroquine, nobody talks about it. Mm. Nobody talks about hydroxychloroquine anymore. So I understand. I look after HIV for so long. Do I get desperate and look for new drugs? No, of course I have. But looking at it carefully, if we don't think this way, you will never progress. You'll always be, I think it works. That's how you know? Because I believe it works. Because I'm desperate, therefore I use it.
Are you hearing trends that people are either not going for vaccinations or choosing not to go and get treatment for COVID because of the belief of ivermectin?
I know of people for sure. I have good friends who are very distraught because their family members do not want to get a vaccine and take ivermectin. I hope there are not a lot of people like this here. But we have a way out of this pandemic, and that is the vaccine. And the vaccine works. We know a lot more of the vaccines for COVID-19 than we know about ivermectin to treat COVID-19. That is a fact, all right? Yes, we are learning new things about the vaccine because it's new, no question. It is new. And the new variants that come, you know, we know about Delta. We know that for all the vaccines, it still covers Delta. It doesn't cover Delta as well, as good as what it covers the original variant, but it still covers, it still helps. The number of deaths and seriously ill people who are fully vaccinated and catching Delta is still less than those who are unvaccinated, right? And you heard the term, you know, it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And up to today, with the Delta variant, it's still true. There is certainly a possibility the new variants that come along that may be resistant to the vaccine. That is something we hope that doesn't happen, but it can happen. So that's why the research has to carry on going. We need to monitor the variants out there. And as new variants start getting prominent, we have to work on the vaccines to treat the vaccines to cover that as well. But that is all part of the research and public health platform that we have to strengthen, right? Mm-hmm. But I think I'm just afraid that people divert away from vaccines for whatever reasons. They do not get vaccinated, don't want to get vaccinated, and take ivermectin when the data is a lot less robust and you're not taking something that's just proven to work. And that's my fear. The other thing is, I know that some people are taking ivermectin at home. And you take ivermectin because you hope it works. You have some faith in the drug. Otherwise, you probably won't take it. And you have symptoms. And the symptoms come and you say, oh, if the symptoms continue to get bad, I'll get admitted to my apps or I'll get admitted to the government hospital. Oh, it's going to be very crowded. Oh, it's going to look like this. You know, we have seen the videos. We have seen the pictures. And yeah, it's probably not a very nice time to go to these hospitals as a patient now. So you can easily understand people, no, I think I'll take another 1-2 days that I think I'll get better. And they do it. And we have seen many patients who are in category 2 and 3, that means hardly any symptoms, very minimal symptoms, they progress to 4 within a short period of 2 or 3 days. And that could be of concern. You are trying something that has not been proven. So these are some of my concerns about ivermectin, you know. But if we had a proper clinical study, then we don't have to worry about this. If it's shown that it works, I'm sure the government will consider giving ivermectin people in category 1 or 2, perhaps, you know?
Of course. Nobody's going to deny treatment that works.
No question.
Yeah. I have a tough one for you. There are a lot of medical doctors and large organizations, some form of, associations that are promoting the use of ivermectin. And you can see why people would believe them because they have some form of credibility. So how would you advise people who hear of these things from these kinds of figures?
Well, those who are medical based people, whether they are researchers or whether they are clinicians, would know this. We are all trained in the same way, how to evaluate good research. We know this. Go back to the gold standard of what is good research. And that's all I can say. This is not what we were taught in medical schools. This is not what we were taught when we were going through our postgraduate training. How we look at a paper and decide whether this is a robust paper that can be used and applied to clinical treatment, or is it something that we still are uncertain and we need more studies for? So go back to the basics, go back to what we were taught, and how it's done. Because what we decide with ivermectin, we're going to decide for other drugs as well. So if somebody now comes up, take this route, it's good for cancer. I've treated 100 people or something like that, or they come up with some studies. And look, we all have heard these studies before. I was doing ozone therapy. I was pushed into that corner. I didn't do it. But hey, it happens. Yeah, it happens. This is, of course, nearly 15, 20 years ago. But if not, the next drug that's the standard we go by, you know? So
yeah,
NPRA,
we keep lowering it.
Yes, NPRA, FDA, they are there for a reason. So the authorities can still try to shorten that process without taking away all any essential steps. And that can be done. And it's something but we have to go through that process. Otherwise, none of us are safe. None of us know whether the drug, somebody comes up. Look, and you look at YouTube, you're all sorts of people, you know, some religious people, some pseudo people, whatever, come and say, oh, this thing is very good. Take minum IANE or minum this one mixed with this. You have seen all that. When do you draw the line? When do you say, oh, that one, well, it won't work, like you're drinking ash water, what's wrong with you? So where do you draw the line? Unless you do a proper clinical study, we will never know for sure. And I'm sure the researchers are familiar with the Cochrane Library. And that conclusion, looking at all these various studies, the good studies, they find there's still inadequate evidence to support the use of this drug for prevention or treating COVID-19. However, in most papers, they will still say, okay, it doesn't mean you should stop doing research. Maybe we should do more. Be more focused in the research, perhaps.
So a final message. What do I tell to somebody who comes and tries to push ivermectin on me, right? The final word of take or don't take?
Well, my opinion is no, because of the data that is missing. Most important thing we can do to prevent this dilemma that you might face if your loved one catches COVID is get them vaccinated, okay? Last week, my mom, who's in a nursing home, and there was one patient in that nursing home, my mom is vaccinated. And yes, some doctor came and approached the manager of the nursing home and says, no, take this ivermectin, give to all these old people. And she actually called every single family to ask them whether they wanted to do ivermectin, to take ivermectin. I said no for the same reason. I said my mom is vaccinated. Monitor her closely, and if she has any symptoms, of course, we screen her as well. And if she has any symptoms, we have to intervene fast and confirm her fast. Thank God, so far, so good. But I don't know whether any of the other families took ivermectin. At the moment, ivermectin sales in Malaysia is only meant for animal use at the moment, isn't it? I don't have to go there. You know what that means. I think we cannot have it both ways. Number one, we trust the pharmacy division. We've trusted them for years. Now we say, we don't trust them anymore. When you choose to want to say they are good, they say, oh, Malaysia, you know, we have a good system. The drugs are safe. Now we say, oh, no, they're not good enough. So when you say that, so the next other new drugs are coming for heart failure, for cancer therapy, or even HIV. How? What do we do then?
But we don't want to be setting a precedent where treatment decisions are based on, like you said, poor data or even lack of, evidence.
We have said this many times during this pandemic, follow the science. But here, clearly, the proponents of ivermectin believe what they have now is enough. But the important question is, if a drug is so good, has been there for so long, you probably have to ask the question, why has there been no major company supporting it? Yes, there'll be conspiracy theories now saying, oh, that's something by Big Pharma blocking this and blocking that, you know, all these things. We have really gone into that rabbit hole, really into that rabbit hole, and think everything is a conspiracy theory. Or is it? All right? Or is there a reason why? I've heard that story for HIV many times. Well, the drugs that are recognized by WHO and UNAIDS are the ones we are using now, and the entire world is using now, including Africa. We know it has saved millions of lives everywhere on the planet. And that is a good example. Where is ozone therapy now? It's not. No one's talking about it now. So I think we have to be logical about it. And yes, I was a bit disappointed to hear some of the MPs talking about it. I think there are bigger issues for us to talk about.
Definitely. Okay, so the thing that we've cleared up, and I've definitely gotten a clear message from you today, don't take ivermectin to prevent. Vaccinations are here to do that. Don't take ivermectin to treat either. It's not, you don't have enough data yet. And what we're looking for is more science. So we're going to be keeping a close eye on the Ministry of Health's trial as well. to see what comes out of that. Thank you so much, Dr. Chris.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking to Dato' Dr. Christopher Lee, infectious disease physician, and you've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.